At 4 o'clock in the morning, the county fairgrounds had been closed for almost 4 hours. The carnies had shut down the Ferris wheel, dive bomber, tilt-a-whirl, and other rides. They had closed up their hanky-panks, grab joints, pitch-and-dunks, pokerino parlors, had turned off the lights and killed the music, and folded up the gaudy glamour. With the departure of the Marks, the carnies had gone to their travel trailers, which were parked in a large meadow south of the Midway. Now the tattooed man, the midgets, dwarves, hustlers, the women from the girly shows, the pitchmen, the bottle pitch and ring toss operators, the man who made cotton candy for a living, the woman who dipped apples in caramel sauce, the bearded lady, the three-eyed man, and all the others were asleep, or fighting insomnia, or making love as if they were ordinary citizens, which, in this world, they were. A three-quarter moon, sliding down one side of the sky, was still high enough to shed a pale, wintry glow that seemed anachronistic in the hot, humid graveyard hours of an August night in Pennsylvania. As I strolled through the lot, getting a feel for the place, I noticed how strangely white my own hands looked in that frosty luminescence, like the hands of a dead man or ghost. That was when I first perceived the lurking presence of death among the rides and hanky-panks, and sensed dimly that the carnival would be the site of murder and much blood. Overhead, lines of plastic pennants hung limp in the muggy air. They were bright triangles when touched by sunshine or splashed in the dazzling glow of 10,000 carnival lights, but were bled of color now, so they seemed like scores of sleeping bats suspended above the sawdust-carpeted concourse. As I passed by the silent carousel, a frozen stampede was halted in mid-gallop. Black stallions, white mares, pintos, palominos, mustangs, charging forward without proceeding, as if the river of time had parted around them. Like a thin spray of metallic paint, traces of moonlight adhered to the brass poles that transfixed the horses, but in that eerie radiance, the brass was silver and cold. I had jumped the high fence that ringed the county fairgrounds, for the gates had been closed when I arrived. Now I felt vaguely guilty, a thief in search of booty, which was odd, for I was no thief, and harbored no criminal intentions toward anyone in the carnival. I was a murderer, wanted by the police in Oregon, but I felt no guilt about the blood I had spilled out there at the other end of the continent. I killed my Uncle Denton with an axe, because I wasn't strong enough to finish him with my bare hands. Neither remorse nor guilt pursued me, for Uncle Denton had been one of them. The police, however, did pursue me, and I couldn't be sure that even 3,000 miles of flight had won me any safety. I no longer used my real name, Carl Stanfus. At first I had called myself Dan Jones, then Joe Dan, then Harry Murphy. Now I was Slim McKenzie, and I figured I would stay Slim for a while. I liked the sound of it. Slim McKenzie. It was the kind of name a guy might have if he were John Wayne's best buddy in one of the Duke's westerns. I had let my hair grow longer, but it was still brown. There was not much else I could do to alter my appearance other than stay free long enough for time to make a different man of me. What I hoped to get from the carnival was sanctuary, anonymity, a place to sleep, 3 square meals a day, and pocket money, all of which I intended to earn. In spite of being a murderer, I was the least dangerous desperado ever to ride out of the West. Nevertheless, I felt like a thief that first night, and I expected someone to raise an alarm, to come running at me through the maze of rides, hamburger stands, and cotton candy kiosks. A couple of security guards must have been cruising the fairgrounds, but when I made my entrance, they were nowhere in sight. Listening for the sound of their car, I continued my nocturnal tour of the famous midway of the Sombra Brothers Carnival, the second largest road show in the country. At last I stopped by the giant Ferris wheel, to which darkness brought a chilling transformation. In the glow of the moon, at this dead hour, it did not resemble a machine, especially not a machine designed for amusement, but gave the impression of being the skeleton of a huge prehistoric beast. The girders and beams and cross supports might not have been wood and metal, but bony accretions of calcium and other minerals.